did. "I wonder why someone wanted to flush it away," said Ron curiously. Harry turned to the back cover of the book and saw the printed name of a variety store on Vauxhall Road, London. "He must have been Muggleborn," said Harry thoughtfully, "to have bought a diary from Vauxhall Road." "Well, it's not much use to you," said Ron. He dropped his voice. 50 points if you can get it through Myrtle's nose." Harry, however, pocketed it. Hermione left the hospital wing, de-whiskered, tailless, and fur-free, at the beginning of February. On her first evening back in Gryffindor Tower, Harry showed her T.M. Riddle's diary and told her the story of how they had found it.
"Ooh, it might have hidden powers," said Hermione enthusiastically, taking the diary and looking at it closely.
"If it has, it's hiding them very well," said Ron. "Maybe it's shy. I don't know why you don't chuck it, Harry."
"I wish I knew why someone did try to chuck it," said Harry. "I wouldn't mind knowing how Riddle got an award for special services to Hogwarts either."
"Could have been anything," said Ron. "Maybe he got 30 OWLs or saved a teacher from the giant squid. Maybe he murdered Myrtle. That would have done everyone a favour." But Harry could tell from the arrested look on Hermione's face that she was thinking what he was thinking.
"What?" said Ron, looking from one to the other. "Well, the Chamber of Secrets was opened 50 years ago, wasn't it?" he said. "That's what Malfoy said."
"Yeah," said Ron slowly.
"And this diary is 50 years old," said Hermione, tapping it excitedly.
"So?"
"Oh, Ron, wake up," snapped Hermione. "We know the person who opened the chamber last time was expelled 50 years ago. We know T.M. Riddle got an award for special services to the school 50 years ago. Well, what if Riddle got his special award for catching the heir of Slytherin? His diary would probably tell us everything. Where the chamber is, and how to open it, and what sort of creature lives in it. The person who's behind the attacks this time wouldn't want that lying around, would they?"
"That's a brilliant theory," Hermione said Ron, "with just one tiny little flaw. There's nothing written in his diary." But Hermione was pulling her wand out of her bag.
"It might be invisible ink," she whispered.
She tapped the diary 3 times and said,
"Aparacium."
Nothing happened. Undaunted, Hermione shoved her hand back into her bag and pulled out what appeared to be a bright red eraser.
"It's a revealer. I got it in Diagon Alley," she said.
She rubbed hard on January 1st. Nothing happened.
"I'm telling you, there's nothing to find in there," said Ron. "Riddle's just got a diary for Christmas and couldn't be bothered filling it in."
Harry couldn't explain, even to himself, why he didn't just throw Riddle's diary away. The fact was that even though he knew the diary was blank, he kept absent-mindedly picking it up and turning the pages, as though it were a story he wanted to finish. And while Harry was sure he had never heard the name T.M. Riddle before, it still seemed to mean something to him, almost as though Riddle was a friend he'd had when he was very small and half forgotten. But this was absurd. He'd never had friends before Hogwarts. Dudley had made sure of that. Nevertheless, Harry was determined to find out more about Riddle, so next day at break, he headed for the trophy room to examine Riddle's special award, accompanied by an interest in Hermione and a thoroughly unconvinced Ron, who told them he'd seen enough of the trophy room to last him a lifetime. Riddle's burnished gold shield was tucked away in a corner cabinet. It didn't carry details of why it had been given to him.
"Good thing, too, or it'd be even bigger, and I'd still be polishing it," said Ron.
However, they did find Riddle's name on an old Medal for Magical Merit and on a list of old head boys.
"He sounds like Percy," said Ron, wrinkling his nose in disgust.
"Prefect, head boy, probably top of the class."
"You say that like it's a bad thing," said Hermione in a slightly hurt voice.
The sun had now begun to shine weakly on Hogwarts again. Inside the castle, the mood had grown more hopeful. There had been no more attacks since those on Justin and Nearly Headless Nick, and Madame Pomfrey was pleased to report that the mandrakes were becoming moody and secretive, meaning that they were fast leaving childhood.
"The moment their acne clears up, they'll be ready for repotting again,"
Harry heard her telling Filch kindly one afternoon.
And after that, it won't be long until we're cutting them up and stewing them. You'll have Mrs. Norris back in no time.
Perhaps the heir of Slytherin had lost his or her nerve, thought Harry. It must be getting riskier and riskier to open the Chamber of Secrets with the school so alert and suspicious. Perhaps the monster, whatever it was even now settling itself down to hibernate for another 50 years. Ernie Macmillan of Hufflepuff didn't take this cheerful view. He was still convinced that Harry was the guilty one, that he had given himself away at the dueling club. Peeves wasn't helping matters. He kept popping up in the crowded corridors singing,
"Oh, Potter, you rotter,"
now with a dance routine to match. Gilderoy Lockhart seemed to think he himself had made the attack stop. Harry overheard him telling Professor McGonagall so while the Gryffindors were lining up for transfiguration.
"I don't think there'll be any more trouble, Minerva," he said, tapping his nose knowingly and winking. "I think the chamber has been locked for good this time. The culprit must have known it was only a matter of time before I caught him. Rather sensible to stop now, before I came down hard on him. You know, what the school needs now is a morale booster. Wash away the memories of last term. I won't say any more just now, but I think I know just the thing."
He tapped his nose again and strode off. Lockhart's idea of a morale booster became clear at breakfast time on February 14th. Harry hadn't had much sleep because of a late-running Quidditch practice the night before, and he hurried down to the Great Hall slightly late. He thought for a moment that he'd walked through the wrong doors. The walls were all covered with large, lurid pink flowers. Worse still, heart-shaped confetti was falling from the pale blue ceiling. Harry went over to the Gryffindor table, where Ron was sitting, looking sickened, and Hermione seemed to have been overcome with giggles. "What's going on?" Harry asked them, sitting down and wiping confetti off his bacon. Ron pointed to the teacher's table, apparently too disgusted to speak. Lockhart, wearing lurid pink robes to match the decorations, was waving for silence. The teachers on either side of him were looking stony-faced. From where he sat, Harry could see a muscle going in Professor McGonagall's cheek. Snape looked as though someone had just fed him a large beaker of Skellagrow.
"Happy Valentine's Day," Lockhart shouted, "and may I thank the 46 people who have so far sent me cards. Yes, I've taken the liberty of arranging this little surprise for you all, and it doesn't end here."
Lockhart clapped his hands, and through the doors to the entrance hall marched a dozen surly-looking dwarfs. Not just any dwarfs, however. Lockhart had them all wearing golden wings and carrying harps.
"My friendly card-carrying cupids," beamed Lockhart. "They will be roving around the school today, delivering your valentines, and the fun doesn't stop here. I'm sure my colleagues will want to enter into the spirit of the occasion. Why not ask Professor Snape to show you how to whip up a love potion? And while you're at it, Professor Flitwick knows more about entrancing enchantments than any wizard I've ever met, the sly old dog."
Professor Flitwick buried his face in his hands. Snape was looking as though the first person to ask him for a love potion would be force-fed poison.
"Please, Hermione, tell me you weren't one of the 46,
said Ron, as they left the Great Hall for their first lesson. Hermione suddenly became very interested in searching her bag for her schedule and didn't answer. All day long, the dwarfs kept barging into their classes to deliver valentines, to the annoyance of the teachers, and late that afternoon, as the Gryffindors were walking upstairs for charms, one of the dwarfs caught up with Harry.
"Oi, you! Harry Potter!"
shouted a particularly grim-looking dwarf, elbowing people out of the way to get to Harry. Hot all over at the thought of being given a valentine in front of a line of first years, which happened to include Ginny Weasley, Harry tried to escape. The dwarf, however, cut his way through the crowd by kicking people's shins and reached him before he'd gone two paces.
"I've got a musical message to deliver to Harry Potter in person,"
he said, twanging his harp in a threatening sort of way.
"Not here,"
Harry hissed, trying to escape.
"Stay still,"
grunted the dwarf, grabbing hold of Harry's bag and pulling him back.
"Let me go."
Harry snarled, tugging. With a loud ripping noise, his bag split in two. His books, wand, parchment, and quills spilled onto the floor, and his ink bottle smashed over everything. Harry scrambled around, trying to pick it all up before the dwarf started singing, causing something of a hold-up in the corridor.
"What's going on here?"
came the cold, drawling voice of Draco Malfoy. Harry started stuffing everything feverishly into his ripped bag, desperate to get away before Malfoy could hear his musical valentine.
"What's all this commotion?"
said another familiar voice as Percy Weasley arrived. Losing his head, Harry tried to make a run for it, but the dwarf seized him around the knees and brought him crashing to the floor.
"Right,"
he said, sitting on Harry's ankles.
"Here's your singing valentine. His eyes are as green as a fresh pickled toad. His hair is as dark as a blackboard. I wish he were mine. He's really divine. The hero who conquered the Dark Lord."
Harry would have given all the golden Gringotts to evaporate on the spot. Trying valiantly to laugh along with everyone else, he got up, his feet numb from the weight of the dwarf, as Percy Weasley did his best to disperse the crowd, some of whom were crying with mirth.
"Off you go, off you go. The bell rang 5 minutes ago. Off to class now," he said, shooing some of the young students away.
"And you, Malfoy." Harry, glancing over, saw Malfoy stoop and snatch up something. Leering, he showed it to Crabbe and Goyle, and Harry realized that he'd got Riddle's diary.
"Give that back," said Harry quietly.
"Wonder what Potter's written in this,"
said Malfoy, who obviously hadn't noticed the year on the cover and thought he had Harry's own diary. A hush fell over the onlookers. Ginny was staring from the diary to Harry, looking terrified.
"Hand it over, Malfoy," said Percy sternly. "When I've had a look," said Malfoy, waving the diary tauntingly at Harry.
Percy said, "As a school prefect..." But Harry had lost his temper. He pulled out his wand and shouted, "Expelliarmus!" And just as Snape had disarmed Lockhart, so Malfoy found the diary shooting out of his hand into the air. Ron, grinning broadly, caught it.
"Harry," said Percy loudly, "no magic in the corridors. I'll have to report this, you know."
But Harry didn't care. He was one up on Malfoy, and that was worth 5 points from Gryffindor any day. Malfoy was looking furious, and as Ginny passed him to enter her classroom, he yelled spitefully after her,
"I don't think Potter liked your valentine much."
Ginny covered her face with her hands and ran into class. Snarling, Ron pulled out his wand too, but Harry pulled him away. Ron didn't need to spend the whole of charms belching slugs. It wasn't until they had reached Professor Flitwick's class that Harry noticed something rather odd about Riddle's diary. All his other books were drenched in scarlet ink. The diary, however, was as clean as it had been before the ink bottle had smashed all over it. He tried to point this out to Ron, but Ron was having trouble with his wand again. Large purple bubbles were blossoming out of the end, and he wasn't much interested in anything else. Harry went to bed before anyone else in his dormitory that night. This was partly because he didn't think he could stand Fred and George singing, "His eyes are as green as a fresh pickled toad," one more time, and partly because he wanted to examine Riddle's diary again and knew that Ron thought he was wasting his time. Harry sat on his four-poster and flicked through the blank pages, not one of which had a trace of scarlet ink on it. Then he pulled a new bottle out of his bedside cabinet, dipped his quill into it, and dropped a blot onto the first page of the diary. The ink shone brightly on the paper for a second, and then, as though it were being sucked into the page, vanished. Excited, Harry loaded up his quill a second time and wrote, "My name is Harry Potter." The words shone momentarily on the page, and they too sank without trace. Then, at last, something happened. Oozing back out of the page, in his very own ink, came words Harry had never written. "Hello, Harry Potter. My name is Tom Riddle. How did you come by my diary?" These words, too, faded away, but not before Harry had started to scribble back. Someone tried to flush it down a toilet. He waited eagerly for Riddle's reply. Lucky that I recorded my memories in some more lasting way than ink, but I always knew that there would be those who would not want this diary read. What do you mean? Harry scrawled, blotting the page in his excitement. I mean that this diary holds memories of terrible things, things that were covered up, things that happened at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. That's where I am now, Harry wrote quickly. I'm at Hogwarts, and horrible stuff's been happening. Do you know anything about the Chamber of Secrets? His heart was hammering. Riddle's reply came quickly, his writing becoming untidier, as though he were hurrying to tell all he knew. Of course I know about the Chamber of Secrets. In my day, they told us it was a legend, that it did not exist, but this was a lie. In my fifth year, the chamber was opened, and the monster attacked several students, finally killing one. I caught the person who'd opened the chamber, and he was expelled. But the headmaster, Professor Dibbitt, ashamed that such a thing had happened at Hogwarts, forbade me to tell the truth. A story was given out that the girl had died in a freak accident. They gave me a nice, shiny, engraved trophy for my trouble and warned me to keep my mouth shut. But I knew it could happen again. The monster lived on, and the one who had the power to release it was not imprisoned. Harry nearly upset his ink bottle in his hurry to write back. It's happening again now. There have been three attacks, and no one seems to know who's behind them. Who was it last time? I can show you, if you like, came Riddle's reply. You don't have to take my word for it. I can take you inside my memory of the night when I caught him. Harry hesitated, his quill suspended over the diary. What did Riddle mean? How could he be taken inside somebody else's memory? He glanced nervously at the door to the dormitory, which was growing dark. When he looked back at the diary, he saw fresh words forming. Let me show you. Harry paused for a fraction of a second and then wrote two letters. O.K. The pages of the diary began to blow as though caught in a high wind, stopping halfway through the month of June. Mouth hanging open, Harry saw that the little square for June 13 seemed to have turned into a minuscule television screen. His hands trembling slightly, he raised the book to press his eye against the little window, and before he knew what was happening, he was tilting forward. The window was widening. He felt his body leave his bed, and he was pitched head first through the opening in the page, into a whirl of color and shadow. He felt his feet hit solid ground and stood shaking as the blurred shapes around him came suddenly into focus. He knew immediately where he was. This circular room with the sleeping portraits was Dumbledore's office. But it wasn't Dumbledore who was sitting behind the desk. A wizened, frail-looking wizard, bald except for a few wisps of white hair, was reading a letter by candlelight. Harry had never seen this man before. "I'm sorry," he said shakily. "I didn't mean to butt in." But the wizard didn't look up. He continued to read, frowning slightly. Harry drew nearer to his desk and stammered, "I'll just go, shall I?" Still the wizard ignored him. He didn't seem even to have heard him. Thinking that the wizard might be deaf, Harry raised his voice. "Sorry, I disturbed you. I'll go now," he half shouted. The wizard folded up the letter with a sigh, stood up, walked past Harry without glancing at him, and went to draw the curtains at his window. The sky outside the window was ruby red. It seemed to be sunset. The wizard went back to the desk, sat down, and twiddled his thumbs, watching the door. Harry looked around the office. No Forks the Phoenix, no whirring silver contraptions. This was Hogwarts as Riddle had known it, meaning that this unknown wizard was headmaster, not Dumbledore, and he, Harry, was little more than a phantom, completely invisible to the people of 50 years ago. There was a knock on the office door.
"Enter,"
said the old wizard in a feeble voice. A boy of about 16 entered, taking off his pointed hat. A silver prefect's badge was glinting on his chest. He was much taller than Harry, but he too had jet-black hair.
"Ah, Riddle," said the headmaster.
"You wanted to see me, Professor Dibbitt?" said Riddle. He looked nervous.
"Sit down,"
said Dibbit.
I've just been reading the letter you sent me.
Oh, said Riddle. He sat down, gripping his hands together very tightly.
My dear boy,
said Dibbit kindly,
I cannot possibly let you stay at school over the summer. Surely you want to go home for the holidays.
No, said Riddle at once. I'd much rather stay at Hogwarts than go back to that...
You live in a Muggle orphanage during the holidays, I believe,
said Dibbit curiously. Yes, sir, said Riddle, reddening slightly.
You are Muggle-born?
Half-blood, sir, said Riddle. Muggle father, witch mother.
And are both your parents?
My mother died just after I was born, sir. They told me at the orphanage she lived just long enough to name me Tom after my father, Malvolo after my grandfather. Dibbit clucked his tongue sympathetically.
The thing is, Tom,
he sighed,
special arrangements might have been made for you, but in the current circumstances...
You mean all these attacks, sir? Said Riddle, and Harry's heart leapt, and he moved closer, scared of missing anything.
Precisely, said the headmaster. My dear boy, you must see how foolish it would be of me to allow you to remain at the castle when term ends, particularly in light of the recent tragedy, the death of that poor little girl. You will be safer by far at your orphanage. As a matter of fact, the Ministry of Magic is even now talking about closing the school. We are no nearer locating the source of all this unpleasantness.
Riddle's eyes had widened. Sir, if the person was caught, if it all stopped...
What do you mean?
Said Dibbit with a squeak in his voice, sitting up in his chair.
Riddle, do you mean you know something about these attacks?
No, sir, said Riddle quickly. But Harry was sure it was the same sort of no that he himself had given Dumbledore. Dibbit sank back, looking faintly disappointed.
You may go, Tom.
Riddle slid off his chair and slouched out of the room. Harry followed him. Down the moving spiral staircase they went, emerging next to the gargoyle in the darkening corridor. Riddle stopped, and so did Harry, watching him. Harry could tell that Riddle was doing some serious thinking. He was biting his lip, his forehead furrowed. Then, as though he had suddenly reached a decision, he hurried off, Harry gliding noiselessly behind him. They didn't see another person until they reached the entrance hall, when a tall wizard with long, sweeping auburn hair and a beard called to Riddle from the marble staircase. "What are you doing, wandering around this late, Tom?" Harry gaped at the wizard. He was none other than a 50-year younger Dumbledore. "I had to see the headmaster, sir," said Riddle. "Well, hurry off to bed," said Dumbledore, giving Riddle exactly the kind of penetrating stare Harry knew so well. Best not to roam the corridors these days, not since... He sighed heavily, bade Riddle good night, and strode off. Riddle watched him walk out of sight, and then, moving quickly, headed straight down the stone steps to the dungeons, with Harry in hot pursuit. But to Harry's disappointment, Riddle led him not into a hidden passageway or a secret tunnel, but to the very dungeon in which Harry had potions with Snape. The torches hadn't been lit, and when Riddle pushed the door almost closed, Harry could only just see him standing stock still by the door, watching the passage outside. It felt to Harry that they were there for at least an hour. All he could see was the figure of Riddle at the door, staring through the crack, waiting like a statue. And just when Harry had stopped feeling expectant and tense and started wishing he could return to the present, he heard something move beyond the door. Someone was creeping along the passage. He heard whoever it was pass the dungeon where he and Riddle were hidden. Riddle, quiet as a shadow, edged through the door and followed. Harry tiptoeing behind him, forgetting that he couldn't be heard. For perhaps 5 minutes, they followed the footsteps, until Riddle stopped suddenly, his head inclined in the direction of new noises. Harry heard a door creak open, and then someone speaking in a hoarse whisper.
"Come on. Gotta get you out of here. Come on now. In the box."
There was something familiar about that voice.
Riddle suddenly jumped round the corner. Harry stepped out behind him. He could see the dark outline of a huge boy who was crouching in front of an open door, a very large box next to it. "Evening, Rubius," said Riddle sharply. The boy slammed the door shut and stood up.
"What are you doing down here, Tom?"
Riddle stepped closer. "It's all over," he said. "I'm going to have to turn you in, Rubius. They're talking about closing Hogwarts if the attacks don't stop."
"What, dear?"
"I don't think you meant to kill anyone, but monsters don't make good pets. I suppose you just let it out for exercise and..."
"It never killed no one,"
said the large boy, backing against the closed door. From behind him, Harry could hear a funny rustling and clicking. "Come on, Rubius," said Riddle, moving yet closer. "The dead girl's parents will be here tomorrow. The least Hogwarts can do is make sure that the thing that killed their daughter is slaughtered."
"It wasn't him,"
roared the boy, his voice echoing in the dark passage.
"He wouldn't. He never."
"Stand aside," said Riddle, drawing out his wand. His spell lit the corridor with a sudden flaming light. The door behind the large boy flew open with such force it knocked him into the wall opposite, and out of it came something that made Harry let out a long, piercing scream unheard by anyone. A vast, low-slung, hairy body, and a tangle of black legs, a gleam of many eyes, and a pair of razor-sharp pincers. Riddle raised his wand again, but he was too late. The thing bowled him over as it scuttled away, tearing up the corridor and out of sight. Riddle scrambled to his feet, looking after it. He raised his wand, but the huge boy leapt on him, seized his wand, and threw him back down, yelling, "No!" The scene whirled. The darkness became complete. Harry felt himself falling, and with a crash, he landed spread-eagled on his four-poster in the Gryffindor dormitory, Riddle's diary lying open on his stomach. Before he had time to regain his breath, the dormitory door opened, and Ron came in.
"There you are,"
he said. Harry sat up. He was sweating and shaking.
"What's up?"
said Ron, looking at him with concern.
"It was Hagrid, Ron."
"Hagrid opened the Chamber of Secrets 50 years ago.
Chapter 14, Cornelius Fudge. Harry, Ron, and Hermione had always known that Hagrid had an unfortunate liking for large and monstrous creatures. During their first year at Hogwarts, he had tried to raise a dragon in his little wooden house, and it would be a long time before they forgot the giant three-headed dog he'd christened Fluffy. And if, as a boy, Hagrid had heard that a monster was hidden somewhere in the castle, Harry was sure he'd have gone to any lengths for a glimpse of it. He'd probably thought it was a shame that the monster had been cooped up so long, and thought it deserved the chance to stretch its many legs. Harry could just imagine the 13-year-old Hagrid trying to fit a leash and collar on it, but he was equally certain that Hagrid would never have meant to kill anybody. Harry half wished he hadn't found out how to work Riddle's diary. Again and again, Ron and Hermione made him recount what he'd seen until he was heartily sick of telling them and sick of the long, circular conversations that followed.
"Riddle might have got the wrong person," said Hermione. "Maybe it was some other monster that was attacking people."
"How many monsters do you think this place can hold?" Ron asked dully.
"We always knew Hagrid had been expelled," said Harry miserably, "and the attacks must have stopped after Hagrid was kicked out, otherwise Riddle wouldn't have got his award."
Ron tried a different tack.
"Riddle does sound like Percy. Who asked him to squeal on Hagrid anyway?"
"But the monster had killed someone, Ron," said Hermione.
"And Riddle was going to go back to some muggle orphanage if they closed Hogwarts," said Harry. "I don't blame him for wanting to stay here."
"You met Hagrid down Nocturne Alley, didn't you, Harry?"
"He was buying a flesh-eating slug repellent," said Harry quickly. The three of them fell silent. After a long pause, Hermione voiced the knottiest question of all in a hesitant voice.
"Do you think we should go and ask Hagrid about it all?"
"That'd be a cheerful visit," said Ron. "Hello, Hagrid. Tell us, have you been setting anything mad and hairy loose in the castle lately?"
In the end, they decided that they wouldn't say anything to Hagrid unless there was another attack. And as more and more days went by with no whisper from the disembodied voice, they became hopeful that they would never need to talk to him about why he had been expelled.
It was now nearly 4 months since Justin and nearly headless Nick had been petrified, and nearly everybody seemed to think that the attacker, whoever it was, had retired for good. Peeves had finally got bored of his, "Oh, Potter, you rotter," song. Ernie McMillan asked Harry quite politely to pass a bucket of leaping toadstools in Herbology one day, and in March several of the mandrakes threw a loud and raucous party in Greenhouse 3. This made Professor Sprout very happy.
"The moment they start trying to move into each other's pots, we'll know they're fully mature,"
she told Harry.
"Then we'll be able to revive those poor people in the hospital wing."
The second years were given something new to think about during their Easter holidays. The time had come to choose their subjects for the third year, a matter that Hermione at least took very seriously.
"It could affect our whole future,"
she told Harry and Ron as they pored over lists of new subjects, marking them with checks. "I just want to give up potions," said Harry. "We can't," said Ron gloomily. "We keep all our old subjects, or I'd have ditched Defense Against the Dark Arts."
"But that's very important," said Hermione, shocked.
"Not the way Lockhart teaches it," said Ron. "I haven't learnt anything from him except not to set pixies loose." Neville Longbottom had been sent letters from all the witches and wizards in his family, all giving him different advice on what to choose. Confused and worried, he sat reading the subject lists with his tongue poking out, asking people whether they thought arithmancy sounded more difficult than the study of ancient runes. Dean Thomas, who, like Harry, had grown up with muggles, ended up closing his eyes and jabbing his wand at the list, then picking the subjects it landed on. Hermione took nobody's advice, but signed up for everything. Harry smiled grimly to himself at the thought of what Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia would say if he tried to discuss his career in wizardry with them. Not that he didn't get any guidance. Percy Weasley was eager to share his experience.
"Depends where you want to go, Harry," he said. "It's never too early to think about the future, so I'd recommend divination. People say muggle studies is a soft option, but I personally think wizards should have a thorough understanding of the non-magical community, particularly if they're thinking of working in close contact with them. Look at my father. He has to deal with muggle business all the time. My brother Charlie was always more of an outdoor type, so he went for care of magical creatures." "Play to your strengths, Harry."
But the only thing Harry felt he was really good at was Quidditch. In the end, he chose the same new subjects as Ron, feeling that if he was lousy at them, at least he'd have someone friendly to help him. Gryffindor's next Quidditch match would be against Hufflepuff. Wood was insisting on team practices every night after dinner, so that Harry barely had time for anything but Quidditch and homework. However, the training sessions were getting better, or at least drier, and the evening before Saturday's match, he went up to his dormitory to drop off his broomstick, feeling Gryffindor's chances for the Quidditch Cup had never been better. But his cheerful mood didn't last long. At the top of the stairs to the dormitory, he met Neville Longbottom, who was looking frantic.
"Harry, I don't know who did it. I just found..."
Watching Harry fearfully, Neville pushed open the door. The contents of Harry's trunk had been thrown everywhere. His cloak lay ripped on the floor, the bedclothes had been pulled off his four-poster, and the drawer had been pulled out of his bedside cabinet, the contents strewn over the mattress. Harry walked over to the bed, open-mouthed, treading on a few loose pages of Travels with Trolls. As he and Neville pulled the blankets back onto his bed, Ron, Dean, and Seamus came in. Dean swore loudly.
"What happened, Harry?"
"No idea," said Harry, but Ron was examining Harry's robes. All the pockets were hanging out. "Someone's been looking for something," said Ron. "Is there anything missing?" Harry started to pick up all his things and throw them into his trunk. It was only as he threw the last of the Lockhart books back into it that he realized what wasn't there. "Riddle's diary's gone," he said in an undertone to Ron.
"What?"
Harry jerked his head toward the dormitory door, and Ron followed him out. They hurried back down to the Gryffindor common room, which was half empty, and joined Hermione, who was sitting alone reading a book called Ancient Runes Made Easy. Hermione looked aghast at the news.
"But
only a Gryffindor could have stolen. Nobody else knows our password.
Exactly, said Harry. They woke next day to brilliant sunshine and a light, refreshing breeze.
Perfect Quidditch conditions, said Wood enthusiastically at the Gryffindor table, loading the team's plates with scrambled eggs. Harry, buck up there. You need a decent breakfast.
Harry had been staring down the packed Gryffindor table, wondering if the new owner of Riddle's diary was right in front of his eyes. Hermione had been urging him to report the robbery, but Harry didn't like the idea. He'd have to tell a teacher all about the diary and how many people knew why Hagrid had been expelled 50 years ago. He didn't want to be the one who brought it all up again. As he left the Great Hall with Ron and Hermione to go and collect his Quidditch things, another very serious worry was added to Harry's growing list. He had just set foot on the marble staircase when he heard it yet again.
Kill this time. Let me rip. Tear.
He shouted aloud, and Ron and Hermione both jumped away from him in alarm.
The voice! Said Harry, looking over his shoulder. I just heard it again. Didn't you?
Ron shook his head, wide-eyed. Hermione, however, clapped a hand to her forehead.
Harry, I think I've just understood something. I've got to go to the library.
And she sprinted away up the stairs.
What does she understand?
Said Harry distractedly, still looking around, trying to tell where the voice had come from. Loads more than I do. Said Ron, shaking his head.
But why's she got to go to the library?
Because that's what Hermione does, said Ron, shrugging. When in doubt, go to the library.
Harry stood, irresolute, trying to catch the voice again. But people were now emerging from the great hall behind him, talking loudly, exiting through the front doors on their way to the Quidditch pitch.
You'd better get moving, said Ron. It's nearly 11, the match.
Harry raced up to Gryffindor Tower, collected his Nimbus 2000, and joined the large crowd swarming across the grounds. But his mind was still in the castle along with the bodiless voice, and as he pulled on his scarlet robes in the locker room, his only comfort was that everyone was now outside to watch the game. The teams walked onto the field to tumultuous applause. Oliver Wood took off for a warm-up flight around the goalpost. Madam Hooch released the balls. The Hufflepuffs, who played in canary yellow, were standing in a huddle, having a last-minute discussion of tactics. Harry was just mounting his broom when Professor McGonagall came half-marching, half-running across the pitch, carrying an enormous purple megaphone. Harry's heart dropped like a stone.
"This match has been cancelled,"
Professor McGonagall called through the megaphone, addressing the packed stadium. There were boos and shouts. Oliver Wood, looking devastated, landed and ran toward Professor McGonagall without getting off his broomstick.
"But Professor," he shouted, "we've got to play the cup, Gryffindor."
Professor McGonagall ignored him and continued to shout through her megaphone.
"All students are to make their way back to the house common rooms where the heads of houses will give them further information. As quickly as you can, please."
Then she lowered the megaphone and beckoned Harry over to her.
"Potter, I think you'd better come with me."
Wondering how she could possibly suspect him this time, Harry saw Ron detach himself from the complaining crowd. He came running up to them as they set off toward the castle. To Harry's surprise, Professor McGonagall didn't object.
"Yes, perhaps you'd better come too, Weasley."
Some of the students swarming around them were grumbling about the match being cancelled. Others looked worried. Harry and Ron followed Professor McGonagall back into the school and up the marble staircase. But they weren't taken to anybody's office this time.
"This will be a bit of a shock," said Professor McGonagall in a surprisingly gentle voice as they approached the infirmary. "There has been another attack, another double attack."
Harry's insides did a horrible somersault. Professor McGonagall pushed the door open and he and Ron entered. Madame Pomfrey was bending over a fifth-year girl with long curly hair. Harry recognized her as the Ravenclaw they'd accidentally asked for directions to the Slytherin common room, and on the bed next to her was...
"Hermione,"
Ron groaned. Hermione lay utterly still, her eyes open and glassy.
"They were found near the library,"
said Professor McGonagall.
I don't suppose either of you can explain this. It was on the floor next to them.
She was holding up a small circular mirror. Harry and Ron shook their heads, both staring at Hermione.
I will escort you back to Gryffindor Tower, said Professor McGonagall heavily. I need to address the students in any case. All students will return to their house common rooms by 6 o'clock in the evening. No student is to leave the dormitories after that time. You will be escorted to each lesson by a teacher. No student is to use the bathroom unaccompanied by a teacher. All further Quidditch training and matches are to be postponed. There will be no more evening activities.
The Gryffindors, packed inside the common room, listened to Professor McGonagall in silence. She rolled up the parchment from which she had been reading and said in a somewhat choked voice,
I need hardly add that I have rarely been so distressed. It is likely that the school will be closed unless the culprit behind these attacks is caught. I would urge anyone who thinks they might know anything about them to come forward.
She climbed somewhat awkwardly out of the portrait hole, and the Gryffindors began talking immediately.
That's two Gryffindors down, not counting a Gryffindor ghost, one Ravenclaw and one Hufflepuff, said the Weasley twins' friend Lee Jordan, counting on his fingers. Haven't any of the teachers noticed that the Slytherins are all safe? Isn't it obvious? All this stuff's coming from Slytherin. The heir of Slytherin, the monster of Slytherin, why don't they just chuck all the Slytherins out?
He roared, to nods and scattered applause. Percy Weasley was sitting in a chair behind Lee, but for once he didn't seem keen to make his views heard. He was looking pale and stunned.
Percy's in shock, George told Harry quietly. That Ravenclaw girl, Penelope Clearwater, she's a prefect. I don't think he thought the monster would dare attack a prefect.
But Harry was only half listening. He didn't seem to be able to get rid of the picture of Hermione lying on the hospital bed as though carved out of stone. And if the culprit wasn't caught soon, he was looking at a lifetime back with the Dursleys. Tom Riddle had turned Hagrid in because he was faced with the prospect of a muggle orphanage if the school closed. Harry now knew exactly how he felt.
What are we going to do? Said Ron quietly in Harry's ear. Do you think they suspect Hagrid? We've got to go and talk to him, said Harry, making up his mind. I can't believe it's him this time, but if he set the monster loose last time, he'll know how to get inside the Chamber of Secrets, and that's a start. But McGonagall said we've got to stay in our tower unless we're in class.
I think, said Harry more quietly still, it's time to get my dad's old cloak out again.
Harry had inherited just one thing from his father, a long and silvery invisibility cloak. It was their only chance of sneaking out of the school to visit Hagrid without anyone knowing about it. They went to bed at the usual time, waited until Neville, Dean, and Seamus had stopped discussing the Chamber of Secrets and finally fallen asleep, then got up, dressed again, and threw the cloak over themselves. The journey through the dark and deserted castle corridors wasn't enjoyable. Harry, who had wandered the castle at night several times before, had never seen it so crowded after sunset. Teachers, prefects, and ghosts were marching the corridors in pairs, staring around for any unusual activity. Their invisibility cloak didn't stop them making any noise, and there was a particularly tense moment when Ron stubbed his toe only yards from a spot where Snape stood standing guard. Thankfully, Snape sneezed at almost exactly the moment Ron swore. It was with relief that they reached the oak front doors and eased them open. It was a clear, starry night. They hurried toward the lit windows of Hagrid's house and pulled off the cloak only when they were right outside his front door. Seconds after they had knocked, Hagrid flung it open. They found themselves face to face with him, aiming a crossbow at them. Fang, the boarhound, barked loudly behind him.
Oh,
he said, lowering the weapon and staring at them.
What are you two doing here?
What's that for?
Said Harry, pointing at the crossbow as they stepped inside.
Nothing, nothing, Hagrid muttered. I've been expecting. Doesn't matter. Sit down. I'll make tea.
He hardly seemed to know what he was doing. He nearly extinguished the fire, spilling water from the kettle on it, and then smashed the teapot with a nervous jerk of his massive hand.
Are you okay, Hagrid?
Said Harry. Did you hear about Hermione?
Oh, I heard all right, said Hagrid, a slight break in his voice.
He kept glancing nervously at the windows. He poured them both large mugs of boiling water. He had forgotten to add tea bags and was just putting a slab of fruitcake on a plate when there was a loud knock on the door.
Hagrid dropped the fruitcake. Harry and Ron exchanged panic-stricken looks, then threw the invisibility cloak back over themselves and retreated into a corner. Hagrid checked that they were hidden, seized his crossbow, and flung open his door once more.
"Good evening, Hagrid."
It was Dumbledore. He entered, looking deadly serious, and was followed by a second very odd-looking man. The stranger had rumpled grey hair and an anxious expression, and was wearing a strange mixture of clothes, a pinstripe suit, a scarlet tie, a long black coat, and pointed purple boots. Under his arm, he carried a lime-green bowler.
"That's Dad's boss," Ron breathed. "Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic."
Harry elbowed Ron hard to make him shut up. Hagrid had gone pale and sweaty. He dropped into one of his chairs and looked from Dumbledore to Cornelius Fudge.
"Bad business, Hagrid," said Fudge in rather clipped tones. "Very bad business. Had to come. 4 attacks on Muggleborns. Things have gone far enough. Ministry's got to act."
"I never," said Hagrid, looking imploringly at Dumbledore. "You know I never, Professor Dumbledore, sir."
"I want it understood, Cornelius, that Hagrid has my full confidence," said Dumbledore, frowning at Fudge. "Look, Albus," said Fudge uncomfortably, "Hagrid's record's against him. Ministry's got to do something. The school governors have been in touch. Yet again, Cornelius, I tell you that taking Hagrid away will not help in the slightest," said Dumbledore. His blue eyes were full of a fire Harry had never seen before. "Look at it from my point of view," said Fudge, fidgeting with his bowler. "I'm under a lot of pressure. Got to be seen to be doing something. If it turns out it wasn't Hagrid, he'll be back, and no more said. But I've got to take him. Got to. Wouldn't be doing my duty."
"Take me?" said Hagrid, who was trembling. "Take me where?"
"For a short stretch only," said Fudge, not meeting Hagrid's eyes. "Not a punishment, Hagrid. More a precaution. If someone else is caught, you'll be let out with a full apology."
"Not Azkaban," croaked Hagrid.
Before Fudge could answer, there was another loud rap on the door. Dumbledore answered it. It was Harry's turn for an elbow in the ribs. He'd let out an audible gasp. Mr. Lucius Malfoy strode into Hagrid's hut, swathed in a long black travelling cloak, smiling a cold and satisfied smile. Fang started to growl.
"Already here, Fudge," he said approvingly. "Good, good."
"What are you doing here?" said Hagrid furiously. "Get out of my house."
"My dear man, please believe me, I have no pleasure at all in being inside your, do you call this a house?"
said Lucius Malfoy, sneering as he looked around the small cabin.
"I simply called at the school and was told that the headmaster was here."
"And what exactly did you want with me, Lucius?" said Dumbledore.
He spoke politely, but the fire was still blazing in his blue eyes.
"Dreadful thing, Dumbledore,"
said Malfoy lazily, taking out a long roll of parchment.
"But the governors feel it's time for you to step aside. This is an order of suspension. You'll find all 12 signatures on it. I'm afraid we feel you're losing your touch. How many attacks have there been now? 2 more this afternoon, wasn't it? At this rate, there'll be no Muggle-borns left at Hogwarts, and we all know what an awful loss that would be to the school."
"Oh, now, see here, Lucius," said Fudge, looking alarmed. "Dumbledore suspended?
No, no. Last thing we want just now. The appointment or suspension of the headmaster is a matter for the governors, Fudge," said Mr. Malfoy smoothly. "And as Dumbledore has failed to stop these attacks..."
"See here, Malfoy,
if Dumbledore can't stop them," said Fudge, whose upper lip was sweating now, "I mean to say, who can?"
"That remains to be seen," said Mr. Malfoy with a nasty smile. "But as all 12 of us have voted..."
Hagrid leapt to his feet, his shaggy black head grazing the ceiling.
"And how many did you have to threaten and blackmail before they agreed, Malfoy, eh?"
he roared.
"Dear, dear, you know that temper of yours will lead you into trouble one of these days, Hagrid," said Mr. Malfoy. "I would advise you not to shout at the Azkaban guards like that. They won't like it at all."
"You can't take Dumbledore,"
yelled Hagrid, making Fang the boarhound cower and whimper in his basket.
"Take him away, and the Muggle-borns won't stand a chance. They'll be killing next."
"Calm yourself, Hagrid," said Dumbledore sharply. He looked at Lucius Malfoy.
"If the governors want my removal, Lucius, I shall, of course, step aside."
"But," stuttered Fudge.
"No,"
growled Hagrid. Dumbledore had not taken his bright blue eyes off Lucius Malfoy's cold grey ones.
"However," said Dumbledore, speaking very slowly and clearly so that none of them would miss a word, "you will find that I will only truly have left this school when none here are loyal to me. You will also find that help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it."
For a second, Harry was almost sure Dumbledore's eyes flickered toward the corner where he and Ron stood hidden.
"Admirable sentiments," said Malfoy, bowing. "We shall all miss your, highly individual way of running things, Albus, and only hope that your successor will manage to prevent any, killings."
He strode to the cabin door, opened it, and bowed Dumbledore out. Fudge, fiddling with his bowler, waited for Hagrid to go ahead of him. But Hagrid stood his ground, took a deep breath, and said carefully,
"If anyone wanted to find out some stuff, all they'd have to do would be to follow the spiders. That'd lead them right. That's all I'm saying."
Fudge stared at him in amazement.
"All right, I'm coming," said Hagrid, pulling on his moleskin overcoat.
But as he was about to follow Fudge through the door, he stopped again and said loudly,
"And someone'll need to feed Fang while I'm away."
The door banged shut, and Ron pulled off the invisibility cloak.
"We're in trouble now," he said hoarsely. "No Dumbledore? They might as well close the school tonight. There'll be an attack a day with him gone."
Fang started howling, scratching at the closed door. Chapter 15. Aragog. Summer was creeping over the grounds around the castle. Sky and lake alike turned periwinkle blue, and flowers large as cabbages burst into bloom in the greenhouses. But with no Hagrid visible from the castle windows, striding the grounds with Fang at his heels, the scene didn't look right to Harry. No better, in fact, than the inside of the castle, where things were so horribly wrong. Harry and Ron had tried to visit Hermione, but visitors were now barred from the hospital wing.
"We're taking no more chances,"
Madame Pomfrey told them severely through a crack in the infirmary door.
"No, I'm sorry, there's every chance the attacker might come back to finish these people off."
With Dumbledore gone, fear had spread as never before, so that the sun warming the castle walls outside seemed to stop at the mullioned windows. There was barely a face to be seen in the school that didn't look worried and tense, and any laughter that rang through the corridors sounded shrill and unnatural and was quickly stifled. Harry constantly repeated Dumbledore's final words to himself. "I will only truly have left this school when none here are loyal to me. Help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it." But what good were these words? Who exactly were they supposed to ask for help when everyone was just as confused and scared as they were? Hagrid's hint about the spiders was far easier to understand. The trouble was, there didn't seem to be a single spider left in the castle to follow. Harry looked everywhere he went, helped, rather reluctantly, by Ron. They were hampered, of course, by the fact that they weren't allowed to wander off on their own, but had to move around the castle in a pack with the other Gryffindors. Most of their fellow students seemed glad that they were being shepherded from class to class by teachers, but Harry found it very irksome. One person, however, seemed to be thoroughly enjoying the atmosphere of terror and suspicion. Draco Malfoy was strutting around the school as though he had just been appointed head boy. Harry didn't realize what he was so pleased about until the potions lesson about 2 weeks after Dumbledore and Hagrid had left, when, sitting right behind Malfoy, Harry overheard him gloating to Crabbe and Goyle.
"I always thought Father might be the one who got rid of Dumbledore," he said, not troubling to keep his voice down. "I told you he thinks Dumbledore's the worst headmaster the school's ever had. Maybe we'll get a decent headmaster now, someone who won't want the Chamber of Secrets closed. McGonagall won't last long, she's only filling in."
Snape swept past Harry, making no comment about Hermione's empty seat and cauldron.
"Sir," said Malfoy loudly, "sir, why don't you apply for the headmaster's job?"
Now, Malfoy," said Snape, though he couldn't suppress a thin-lipped smile. "Professor Dumbledore has only been suspended by the governors. I dare say he'll be back with us soon enough."
"Yeah, right," said Malfoy, smirking. "I expect you'd have Father's vote, sir, if you wanted to apply for the job. I'll tell Father you're the best teacher here, sir."
Snape smirked as he swept off around the dungeon, fortunately not spotting Seamus Finnegan, who was pretending to vomit into his cauldron.
"I'm quite surprised the mudbloods haven't all packed their bags by now," Malfoy went on. "Bet you 5 galleons the next one dies. Pity it wasn't Granger."
The bell rang at that moment, which was lucky. At Malfoy's last words, Ron had leapt off his stool, and in the scramble to collect bags and books, his attempts to reach Malfoy went unnoticed.
"Let me at him," Ron growled, as Harry and Dean hung onto his arms. "I don't care. I don't need my wand. I'm going to kill him with my bare hands." "Hurry up. I've got to take you all to herbology," barked Snape over the class's heads, and off they marched, with Harry, Ron, and Dean bringing up the rear, Ron still trying to get loose.
It was only safe to let go of him when Snape had seen them out of the castle, and they were making their way across the vegetable patch toward the greenhouses. The herbology class was very subdued. There were now 2 missing from their number, Justin and Hermione. Professor Sprout set them all to work pruning the Abyssinian shrivel figs. Harry went to tip an armful of withered stalks onto the compost heap and found himself face to face with Ernie Macmillan. Ernie took a deep breath and said, very formally,
"I just want to say, Harry, that I'm sorry I ever suspected you. I know you'd never attack Hermione Granger, and I apologize for all the stuff I said. We're all in the same boat now, and, well..."
He held out a pudgy hand, and Harry shook it. Ernie and his friend Hannah came to work at the same shrivel fig as Harry and Ron.
"That Draco Malfoy character," said Ernie, breaking off dead twigs, "he seems very pleased about all this, doesn't he? Do you know, I think he might be Slytherin's heir."
"That's clever of you," said Ron, who didn't seem to have forgiven Ernie as readily as Harry.
"Do you think it's Malfoy, Harry?" Ernie asked.
"No," said Harry, so firmly that Ernie and Hannah stared. A second later, Harry spotted something. Several large spiders were scuttling over the ground on the other side of the glass, moving in an unnaturally straight line as though taking the shortest route to a prearranged meeting. Harry hit Ron over the hand with his pruning shears.
"Ouch! What are you..."
Harry pointed out the spiders, following their progress with his eyes screwed up against the sun.
"Oh, yeah," said Ron, trying and failing to look pleased. "But we can't follow them now."
Ernie and Hannah were listening curiously. Harry's eyes narrowed as he focused on the spiders. If they pursued their fixed course, there could be no doubt about where they would end up.
"Looks like they're heading for the Forbidden Forest."
And Ron looked even unhappier about that. At the end of the lesson, Professor Sprout escorted the class to their Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson. Harry and Ron lagged behind the others so they could talk out of earshot.
"We'll have to use the invisibility cloak again," Harry told Ron. "We can take Fang with us. He's used to going into the forest with Hagrid. He might be some help."
"Right," said Ron, who was twirling his wand nervously in his fingers. Aren't there
supposed to be werewolves in the forest?"
he added as they took their usual places at the back of Lockhart's classroom.
Preferring not to answer that question, Harry said, "There are good things in there, too. The centaurs are all right, and the unicorns. Ron had never been into the Forbidden Forest before. Harry had entered it only once and had hoped never to do so again. Lockhart bounded into the room and the class stared at him. Every other teacher in the place was looking grimmer than usual, but Lockhart appeared nothing short of buoyant.
"Come now," he cried, beaming around him. "Why all these long faces?"
People swapped exasperated looks, but nobody answered.
"Don't you people realize," said Lockhart, speaking slowly as though